After an injury-riddled 2024, the Atlanta Braves are dealing with it again now that Sean Murphy has a broken rib. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, March 4th. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. And as always, send your friends firstpitchpodcast.com to get every episode of the show. I want to talk about we're continuing our central previews for the National League with the Cardinals today. I want to talk about Jose Altuve's position change, kind of sounding like it's permanent. And Jose Quintana finally joining a team. But first, some notable injuries to discuss. And the first one, Sean Murphy of the Atlanta Braves suffered a cracked rib when he was hit by a pitch last Friday against the Marlins. So one, interdivision crime right there. But he is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. Not of the regular season, but 4 to 6 weeks from now. So opening day, obviously 3 weeks. He's going to be out for a couple weeks of the regular season. And as a reminder, he's the guy that missed the start of last year because he pulled an oblique on opening day and didn't come back for a month and a half or so and arguably never looked right the entire rest of the season. Is this a huge problem for the Atlanta Braves, or is this something where the lineup's good enough, they have enough depth, that provided he's not out for a long time, they can get through this?
Yeah, as far as offensively goes, I think the Atlanta Braves will be fine without Sean Murphy because of the depth and because of, you know, what we've seen from Drake Baldwin this spring, who could potentially be on the major league roster because of Sean Murphy's injury sooner than they expected, of course. But desperate times call for desperate measures. But
yeah, it's, I mean, Baldwin, top 100 prospect, lefty hitting catcher that can hit for power. I mean, he's looked pretty good in his limited AAA time. It's just been limited AAA time.
Right. And yeah, it's his limited AAA time. He's going to be up. He could potentially be up in the majors a lot sooner than anyone expected or anyone wanted him to be. But, you know, with Sean Murphy down, and this also is like one of the first times in a long time where you look at an acquisition by the Braves and just it this one hasn't worked out. Like every acquisition by the Braves for the better part of the last decade has gone very heavily in the Braves' favor. I mean, the Shelby Miller trade, that Braves traded Shelby Miller, he turned into a pumpkin, and then
they got Dan Swanson and Ender Inciarte out of it.
Right. Yeah. And Chris Sale, you know, the Braves
Matt
traded.
Olson. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy how this one's worked out. But I think that at this point, because of the track record that Sean Murphy has had during his tenure with the Braves, it's probably time to start looking for somebody else to fill that full-time catcher role.
Yeah, I mean, he was really good in 2023, was an all-star, hit almost 300 for the first half. And he played almost every day when Travis d'Arnaud was out for like a month with a concussion. And then he talked about the heat got to him down the stretch. He was moving from Oakland to Atlanta, obviously a lot hotter in the South than it is in California. And he had like a minor hamstring thing that came up during the season. And then last year, obviously the oblique injury, just a lost season really when he finally got on the field. And then now d'Arnaud's gone. And the plan was to play Murphy, you know, 4 out of every 5 games, 5 out of every 6 games, and not having him for a couple weeks. They've got some veterans in camp, right? Chadwick Tromp's been the third catcher. Chris Sale, you mentioned Chris Sale. Sale shouted out Tromp specifically in his Cy Young acceptance speech. Like, they like throwing to Chadwick Tromp, which was a change. William Contreras, there was pitchers on the staff reportedly. I think Mark Bowman of MLB.com said there were pitchers on the staff that refused to pitch to William Contreras because his defense and his game calling was so below average. And so Chadwick Tromp can be a defensive guy for you for a couple weeks. They have Kurt Casale in camp. They have Sandy Leone in camp. Like, you could bring one of those veterans, but this gives you a chance if you want to evaluate Baldwin for a couple weeks, right? You can learn a lot from a dude in 2 or 3 weeks on how he can handle major league pitching in either he's successful and you find a way to keep him up and work his bat in, or he's not. And you can send him back to Gwinnett and you have a to-do list for him. Hey, we need you to get better against velocity. We need you to get better against spin away, like whatever it is. So I think that this, provided it is in fact a short-term injury, right? Like provided he's only out a couple weeks and that he doesn't have any lingering effects on his offense when he comes back, this could theoretically end up being, at the end of the day, a good thing for the Braves because it gets you a lot more information about how ready Baldwin is. Braves are in a situation where Marcell Ozuna is going to be a free agent after this year and they won't have a full-time DH. They can bring him back if they want to, or if Baldwin's ready, you can promote Baldwin and you can kind of create a DH. You can recreate Marcell Ozuna in the aggregate out of Drake Baldwin, out of Sean Murphy, out of off days for some of the veterans like Matt Olson or Ronald Acuna Jr. or things like that. You know, Jerickson Profar could DH once or twice a week or whatever. But Baldwin's an intriguing player. I really like him. There's a specific reason why I'm high on Drake Baldwin.
Why do you like him?
Because he gets on base.
So I'm curious to see what they do. Like I wrote a whole newsletter about this that came out Tuesday morning, bravestoday.com, talking about the different options they have on this. But it kind of sucks that they have this injury. But to your point, he was going to bat in the bottom three anyway. It's not like they're losing the leadoff man or they're losing, you know, their cleanup hitter. They're losing a guy who was going to bat probably seventh or eighth.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's just the Braves have so much offensive depth. They're not going to need too much offensive production out of their catcher position, no matter who it is that fills that role. So like you said, it could be a blessing in disguise. I mean, it sucks that Sean Murphy's hurt, of course, and you never want to see an injury. But as you said, this could be a good thing. It could turn into a good thing for the Braves in the long run.
Yeah. From a team in the National League East to a team in the American League East, Luis Gill, last year's Rookie of the Year for the New York Yankees, is not going to throw for at least 6 weeks after being diagnosed with a high-grade right lat strain. So this is a team that already was going to miss Giancarlo Stanton for opening day. He's getting a platelet-rich injections in both elbows. He's also in New York attending to a personal matter, which they haven't really discussed. Obviously, it's personal. I don't want to know. But DJ LeMahieu felt a tweak in his calf running the baseline. Clark Schmidt has yet to make his debut in spring training with back stiffness. Scott Efros, we talked about that grade 2 hamstring strain. He's going to be out for a while. How big is it that they didn't trade Marcus Stroman now? Because you were talking about like there were 6 starters for 5 spots. Is Marcus Stroman going to be the 5th starter to open the year with Luis Gill down until probably, I'd imagine, he doesn't make it back? If it's 6 weeks before he throws, it's probably going to be 3 weeks to a month of throwing before he can actually complete a rehab start and make it to the majors. Is it going to be the entire month of April and part of May that Stroman's in the rotation?
It could turn into a lot longer than that, because if you remember last year, and this is a tweet from Brian Hoch, I want to give him credit for this. Clark Schmidt had a similar injury on May 26th of last year, and he didn't pitch again until in the majors until September 7th. So it could be a very long time, but it's probably most likely going to be Marcus Stroman filling that role in the rotation. And, you know, he said a couple of weeks ago that he's not pitching out of the bullpen. He's a starter. And this probably wasn't just arrogance out of Marcus Stroman. It was probably, you know, a little bit of foreshadowing, and he was probably pulling some Tanya Harding in the clubhouse there on Luis Hill, because it's, He's got his role in the rotation now. He told us he wasn't going to pitch out of the bullpen, and now he's most likely not. But no, it's the run of bad luck on the injuries has now seemed to transfer to the Yankees, and they're probably going to be that team that deals with those injuries this year, like the Dodgers and the Braves did last year. And it's starting early, and it's not a good sign for how the season's going to go in the Bronx.
No, and the thing. this is not, these things are not connected, right? But I think about how Gil had, you know, reconstructive elbow surgery and he missed almost all of 22 and 23. He got like 25 innings in 2022 between AAA and the majors before he went down with surgery. In 23, he pitched a grand total of 4 competitive innings, all in single A. And then last year, he comes up between double A and the majors. He pitches 155 innings. And it's like he goes from 4 innings to 155. And then he's hurt this year. And again, I'm not saying that he's hurt because he had a huge workload jump. But it's interesting to point out that he had a huge workload jump and then got hurt. And it makes me think about the other team in New York, the Mets. Like Kodai Senga is in a similar situation. He pitched 5 1/3 innings in the regular season between the shoulder and the calf injuries. He came back for the postseason and got rocked in the postseason. But like, if he's able to make it back and he has a season like Gil had where he makes 30 starts and 150 something innings, is he going to be healthy for 26? And it's just like, that's what makes free agency and acquiring pitchers and stuff so hard, is I feel like there's a very limited number of guys that can go out there and give you 162 innings every year. And the list of guys who can do that and are also good is even shorter. And so you have to pay for innings. And you have to pay a ton for quality innings. And it's just, this is another sign that, like, you know, it doesn't matter where a player is in their career, they're not immune to these workload issues. And I do think the Yankees are a little bit in trouble here with the injuries that are already starting. It may help them preserve some depth because you can throw LeMahieu on the IL and keep somebody else on the roster. But, like, not a good sign when you're already down, what, we mentioned 5 players in this segment.
Yeah, it's an insane start to the season on the injury front. You know, Travis Hunter wants to say that his job is a lot harder and he's doing a lot better job than Shohei Ohtani, who pitches and hits. But look at all these pitchers going down with injury because of throwing a baseball.
I will say that I feel like playing in the NFL is harder on your body than playing in baseball, right? Like the peak demands on your body. There's a reason they play – you know, they don't play any more than 4 or 5 days apart, right? Like, I get that. I do think that the comparison to Shohei, the issue you have there is Shohei has won multiple MVP awards for not only doing it, but being the absolute best on the planet at it in a way that we've never seen before. Maybe Travis Hunter ends up, you know, winning an MVP one day as a wide receiver and a quarterback. Maybe he makes us look dumb. But I do think that while it is physically more demanding to do it on the NFL side, it is harder to do it in baseball because those two things are so specialized and there's not a ton of overlap between pitching and hitting like there is between playing defensive back and wide receiver.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. Obviously, getting tackled is a lot worse on the body than hitting a baseball or pitching. But at the same time, as everyone knows, especially those that are listening to this show, hitting a baseball is the hardest thing to do in all of sports,
and it's not particularly close.
Yeah, and
it's like maybe like hockey goalies are probably right behind them, and playing cornerback, I would argue, is also a very hard thing to do because it's all just reacting. Yeah. But yeah, no, hitting the baseball consistently well is the hardest thing to do in sports, and it's not particularly close.
And Shohei hit it 56 times pretty well last year. So
yeah. Okay, so going from some of the injuries to a signing, Jose Quintana finds a team finally. He signs with the Brewers 1 year, $4.25 million. This really kind of feels like a if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing, because the Brewers have just not been able to beat Jose Quintana in history. They have really struggled against Jose Quintana. In his career, 22 appearances, 23 starts. He has a 2.98 ERA in 130 career innings. Like, he's done pretty well against them. He has a complete game shutout against them too. He had in 2017. Is this a surprising move? Is this a good move? Is this a, they swooped in and just got a guy cheaply and now their rotation's maybe good enough to compete with Chicago, given the fact that they have a bunch of arms on the IL? I mean, they've got Bob Gass had Tommy John, DL Hall's out, Brandon Woodruff still out with that shoulder issue. And then Aaron Ashby left his start yesterday with a strained oblique.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's good enough to compete with Chicago yet, but I do think that adding Jose Quintana is a good addition. He's a good veteran to add to the rotation. He's coming off of two really good years with the Mets over his last two seasons, and it's crazy because, you know, the rumors were that the Mets were interested in him and he was interested in returning to the Mets, and then really nothing came of that. He even turned down rumored to turn down an offer from the Pittsburgh Pirates before they pivoted to Andrew Haney. And the deal that they offered Quintana was more than the $5.25 million that they offered that they gave Haney. And so he kind of took a pay cut to not pitch for the Pirates, which, you know, take from that what you will. We talked about them on the first day of the week in our NL Central preview. But it's a good addition for the Brewers. It adds more depth, and he's going to eat a lot of innings. He hasn't really dealt with injuries too much over the past few seasons, so you can pretty much expect him to get 25 to 30 starts and have a good year, have a solid, decent year.
On the innings front, I think that's worth mentioning. You touched on it about how he's gonna eat plenty of innings barring injury. If you look at the rotation that they have now, Freddie Peralta, Tobias Myers, Nestor Cortez, Aaron Civale, Jose Quintana, I personally don't see any of these guys as better than like a number two or number three. So you may be in trouble when you get to the postseason if you don't have like a DL Hall back or Brandon Woodruff back or whatever. But I do think what you get from this is innings. Last year, four of these five guys made 30 or more starts. Three of them, their innings counts were in 170 or higher, and another guy finished at 161, so just short of qualifying for the ERA title. Tobias Myers is the one that only had 138 innings. So they're very much going for the quantity over quality here. Now, not guaranteed to work. We saw St. Louis try that with a bunch of old veterans a couple years ago, and it did not pan out. Your Lance Lynn's and things like that. But I do think that is, I don't want to break down this whole Brewers team right now because that's coming up later in the week, but I do think that it's relevant to point out that they've had quite a few of these starters give them significant innings. And so you feel like the floor is there on the rotation, and Quintana just reinforces that floor. And then the question is, can somebody step up to be a postseason caliber guy by the time you get there?
Yeah, for sure. And as it looks right now, I don't see anybody that can do that. Maybe Aaron Civale, but it's like you said, it's more quantity over quality, and it's going to help out their bullpen. So it's a good add, in my opinion.
It's going to come down to the hurt guys, right? Can prospect DL Hall, or he's not the prospect anymore, but can DL Hall, can Jacob Mizorowski, like, can one of those guys step up? Can Brandon Woodruff make it back and look like the old Brandon Woodruff? He's missed like a year and a half now with the shoulder issue. So that's kind of where it is. Before we get into the division preview, real quick, we got some more info on Jose Altuve's position change. This is really happening now. Joe Espada talked to the media yesterday, and he said that, like, the door is open for Altuve to get some time at second base, but like, it's not his primary position. The quote here, all right, quote, right now the plan is for Altuve to play the majority of his games in left field. The days that he plays second base opens the door for Alvarez, maybe getting a start in left field, and someone getting a DH day. So this move allows us to be creative and do stuff like that, end quote. But he does say that Altuve's flopping back and forth between left field and second base, quote, is something that I am going to avoid. Given that Mauricio Dubon is a very good defensive second baseman, given that Brendan Rodgers is a very good defensive second baseman, and given that Jose Altuve is not, When you've got some ground ball guys like Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown, in retrospect, like, we were down on this when they announced it, but is this legitimately maybe a good move?
I think that the infield defense improvements, I think that that's a good aspect of it. I still don't see Altuve working out in left field in the long run as a good thing. It's just, I know that at the icebox, it's a very truncated left field. He's not going to have too much ground to cover ground out to cover. There in left field, yeah. But it's still, they play 81 games at other parks also. So, and the other parks have a lot more ground to cover in left field than they have at the icebox. So it's, and he's old, man. He is way too old to be running in left field so much. It's just, I at this point, I feel like they saw my tweet and they're like, we're going to show this dude that he's just a dumbass because we're going to put him in left field and that's going to be it regardless of what he said. I don't get it. I still don't get it. The infield defense improvement's a good thing. Other than that, I don't know, man.
Let's play devil's advocate here though. Like, if he doesn't get hurt, right, and if he can produce close to what he's done offensively, is having him out there really that much worse than playing Ben Gamel or Chaz McCormick or Jake Myers? Because that's your outfield right now, right? Like, you, instead of having all three of them in the lineup and having a Dubon or a Rogers on the bench, you can get one of those other guys who at least has some upside in the infield. Now, I think it's different if they go out and they sign like Alex Verdugo or David Peralta. I thought Verdugo would be a great fit for Houston, right? But is Altuve really going to be that worse than Ben Gamel out there? And I do think you do get some offensive upside. The question is, and you touched on it, he's pretty old to be doing a bunch of running like that. A lot of outfielders we see as they get up into their 30s, guys who have played outfield all year, or all their all careers, they have to move to a less demanding corner position. They have to take more time at DH to save their legs and things like that. Think about Andrew McCutchen's barely played the field in the last couple seasons, right? Is Altuve maybe too old to do some of that? I don't know. But I think that's the big question. If he can keep his offense up, then you really live with whatever you get defensively from him, because it's hard for him to hurt you as much in that home left field as it is somebody else.
Yeah, no. That's certainly a good point. I never thought about it in that light as far as the lengthening the lineup, and it will certainly do that, having a Brendan Rodgers or Mauricio Dubon in over Ben Gamel or whoever it is. And it'll certainly do that, especially if Jose Altuve can continue to be the offensive force that he's been over the past decade plus. And but it's just they've got to do whatever they can to keep him on the field if they're gonna make this left field thing stick.
Yeah. All right. Going into our division preview here, St. Louis Cardinals, we have them finishing second in the division. Fangraphs odds have them finishing third, 83 and seven. I'm sorry, we haven't finished in fourth. Fangraphs has them finishing third, 83 and 79. Feels too high to me. This is a really weird thing. They talked about kind of retooling and, you know, rebuilding some, but they didn't trade away Wilson Contreras. They didn't trade away Nolan Arenado. They didn't trade away veteran Eric Fetty or Sonny Gray or Miles Mikolas or anything, Steven Matz. They have these over 30 starters. They have these over 30 bats. It's a young lineup other than that. But I guess starting with the lineup, Mason Winn at shorts, one of the more dynamic and impressive young defenders in baseball. I think he'll be good this year. Contreras is now at first versus catching. With Ivan Herrera and Pedro Pajes behind the plate, you know, you've got Nolan Gorman, who's never defensively been great at second base. He hits a ton of tanks. He strikes out a ton, 37% rate last year. I think he got an option down late in the year. Nolan Arenado still at third, trying to, you know, get back to his career norms and some of that stuff. An outfield of like Brendan Donovan, Lars Nootbaar, Jordan Walker, and some interesting depth pieces, right? Your backup center fielder could be Michael Ciani or, oh my gosh, what's the super speedy kid's name? Victor Scott. You know, you have slugger Lucan Baker. He hit like 40 home runs in AAA 2 years ago. Thomas Sujacy can be your flex guy in the infield. Donovan can move around a lot too. The lineup feels fine. It's just a lot of guys that you need to kind of figure it out, right? Like, you need Gorman to figure it out. You need Jordan Walker to figure it out. And I just don't like, you need the catchers, the Ivan Herrera and the Pedro Pages together to be able to give you enough. Herrera is the better offensive one. I don't remember how good his defense is, but like, it feels like it's fine, but it's not really enough.
Yeah, for sure. It's if the offense as a whole kind of just feels like it's in the early stages of a rebuild, and then they're kind of starting to bring some of the younger guys up and waiting on them to become the forces that they expect them to be in the future. And if it still feels too early for a lot of these guys to, you know, make those steps forward to be to put the Cardinals in a position to compete with the Cubs and the Brewers at the top of the division. Like, Mason Winn is still just 23 and Jordan Walker is 22. And while they can take those steps forward, it's just, we haven't seen them do it yet for a consistent period of time. And it's not really likely that they'll do it this year. I mean, especially if Nolan Arenado continues to struggle. I'm pretty high on Brendan Donovan. You know, he went to South Alabama, but yeah. Could be a little bit biased there.
One of your guys, yeah.
But yeah, the line, it's just, while the lineup is probably a strength of this team, especially over the starting rotation, that's really not saying much.
Yeah, and get into that rotation. I mean, Sonny Gray, that really large and odd free agent contract when he left the Twins. Eric Fetty, the trade acquisition from the White Sox, as their number two. Miles Mikolas, Andre Pallante, the only one of the five under the age of 30. Steven Matz. I mean, another bulk thing here, right? Fetty and Mikolas qualified for the Uri title. Gray was close at 166. Steven Matz, as he's coming back from injury, should be able to give you, you know, more of a significant inning workload. And then they've had some pitchers that they've kind of moved to the pen, either temporarily or permanently. Lefty Matthew Liberatore, who I thought had a lot of similarities to Max Fried, didn't figure it out like Max Fried did. Gordon Graceffo has kind of been working a lot as a long man. But they've got some promising prospects as like Pink Hints, Quinn Matthews, Max Ragic, a lot of promising pitching prospects in the minors. Sam Reversi, Takoa Roby, Cooper Yerpe. Does it feel like they're going to keep a lot of these veterans all season? Or are we going to, this is going to be a situation where we're going to see these guys get moved at the deadline so that they can really finally usher in the youth movement in the rotation like they have in the lineup?
It really just comes down to their organizational mindset, because so far they have just been anti-rebuild and against doing anything that signifies that they are in a full rebuild, which is what they've been needing to go into for quite some time now. And yeah. I think it all just comes down to that, because at the deadline, we should probably see some of these guys be traded, especially, you know, if Sonny Gray is a top 20 pitcher in Major League Baseball again this year or something along those lines. Because they need that youth movement to finally get those reps at the major league level that they've been needing to take that next step forward and become a better unit to help the future instead of just struggling in mediocrity right now in the present.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues they had too, and we saw this come up a little bit over the winter break, is some of these contracts aren't necessarily set up properly for them to be able to get out of them. Sonny Gray has a very weird salary structure, right? He made it's 3 years, $75 million, but he made $10 million in 24. He makes $25 million this season and $35 million next season. It's almost like they designed it with the intention of flipping him a year or two into it. He has a club option for $30 million for 27. There's a $5 million buyout. If the team exercises the club option, he can opt out by forfeiting the buyout. Weird contract thing, but he has a full no trade clause, so he has to approve a deal. Nolan Arenado has a full no trade clause, and he invoked it to not get moved to the Astros earlier in the season. Contreras has a full no trade clause that expires after 2026. And oddly, in the contract, again, weird contract structures, it turns for 2027 and 28, it turns into a 10-team no-trade list. But I think he'll have 10 and 5 rights at that time, and he'll have a full no-trade clause anyway. So, like, it's just a really odd and just really odd contract structure. I'm going to go check that real quick if he'll have 10 and 5 rights at that point. 10 years in the majors, 5 with your current team means that you can block any trade.
Yep.
And so he spent six full seasons with Chicago, and then he's already at 2 seasons with the Cardinals. So yeah, he'll have 10 and 5 rights, and it doesn't matter that that becomes a 10 team no trade list because he'll have 10 and 5 rights. If I'm wrong, let me know, people, but I'm pretty sure that's how that works. This whole team is just weird, man. Like, I don't understand what this front office is doing. Ryan Helsley's a guy you kind of felt like last year of his deal, a closer. I think he led baseball in saves last year. Was 49. Like, he felt like a dude you would move in the offseason. Fetty has 1 year of team control left. He felt like a guy you would move. Again, Arenado, who wanted to leave, right? Like, he wanted to go to Boston, and they ended up taking Bregman over him. Contreras, Sonny Gray. It felt like you should have seen 5 or 6 different dudes get dealt off this roster for prospects and young talent, and they just didn't do it. And the guys, but they're not good enough to change the ultimate fate of this team. You're just spending money on them when you didn't have to, and blocking prospects and not increasing your talent level. I don't understand what the Cardinals did here.
Yeah, it doesn't make too much sense, and they're, like you said, they should have traded guys like Ryan Helsley and Eric Fetty, and they should have worked harder to get a Nolan Arenado deal done and Contreras. And I think that after 2026, he'll only have 4 years with the Cardinals, so he'll need 2027 to be the 5th for the 10 and 5
okay.
rights.
Okay, so he will actually have 1 year where that 10-team list does matter, yeah. And then after that –
it'll be 10.
He'll have 10 and 5 for that final season. Okay, wow. That's
It's crazy. It doesn't it's definitely interesting, but
unless I missed something on that, like that just that's just odd that at least they'll have a 1 year window where they can move him with 2 years left of the deal if they want to. As long as it's not one of the 10 teams he doesn't want to go to. So
that'd be right. Fun. But yeah, it's just this team doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I do like Ryan Helsley at the back end of the bullpen. He's one of the better closers in baseball, and he proved that last year. But other than that, there's not really
Ryan Helsley and the boys is your bullpen.
Ryan Helsley and the boys is the bullpen, and Nolan Arenado and the boys is the offense, and Sonny Gray and the boys is the rotation. So it's not a great team.
Fangraphs projection 83 and 79. We're both 100% on the under. I don't think this team breaks 500.
No, I don't either. I think they're gonna. I honestly think the Pirates and Cardinals are gonna finish pretty close, and it would not surprise me in the slightest if the Pirates finish in 4th and the Cardinals finish in 5th.
At least with the Cardinals or with the Pirates, you see it's like they have better pitching. The feels like the Cardinals have a better lineup, but like. It's just which one of those units is better and how much can the other one rebound, right? Yep. And so, like, I have the Cardinals, I think, in 4th just because I think their worst unit can be a little bit better than the Pirates' worst. I think the Pirates' offense is going to be dreadful, but that could change. O'Neal Cruz could go off and go 40-40. Who knows? This has been First Pitch for Tuesday, March 4th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. Maybe also leave us a 5-star review. That'd be great. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.